As you've probably heard by now, we've teamed up with BetMGM this season. We'll be using BetMGM lines to make all of our picks, and we'll have special offers for our listeners each week. If you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC, and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager with BetMGM. Here's how it works. Download the BetMGM app and sign up using bonus code THEATHLETIC. Make your first deposit of at least $10, place your first bet on any game, and claim your voucher for a one-year subscription to The Athletic. See BetMGM.com for terms. U.S. promotional offers not available in D.C., Mississippi, New York, Nevada, Ontario, or Puerto Rico. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Available in the U.S. Call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY-467-369 in New York. Call 1-800-NEXT-STEP in Arizona. 1-800-327-5050 in Massachusetts. 1-800-BETS-OFF in Iowa. 1-800-270-7117 for confidential help in Michigan. 1-800-981-0023 in Puerto Rico. First bet offer for new customers only in partnership with Kansas Crossing Casino and Hotel. Don't forget, if you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager.
Podcast on the Athletic Network. It's Wednesday, July 7th. Jay Skeets rolling with the homie, Tass Mellis.
What's up, everybody?
Got my Top Shot Hot Boy, Trey Kirby.
Heyo!
Hey!
Yo!
The international man of mystery, taking it to the max, Lee Ellis.
Friends.
France. Finally, making the magic happen. It's JD.
Hello.
There he is. Here we are. Shout out to the stream team joining us live right now on YouTube. We see you. Please smash that like button. Leave your comments below the video. And if you haven't already, subscribe to No Dunks on YouTube. Keep sending in your questions and comments for the next Beach Steppin' podcast. Email them in. Best way to do it. NoDunks@theathletic.com. And finally, go grab your No Dunks merch over at NoDunks.com. All right, right into it here. We got the up-down report a little bit later, but NBA Finals Game 1 recap. That's what we're doing. CP3 carries the Suns past Giannis. Yes, he's back, baby. And the Bucks in the NBA Finals opener. Tass, get us started. What was a big takeaway from that Game 1 Phoenix Suns victory?
First thing to take away is that basketball is freaking amazing. Second thing to take away is that if the Bucks didn't have Giannis Antetokounmpo in this series, it would have been a quick win for the Phoenix Suns. And it was great to see Giannis back looking freaking great. So the Suns got to feel good about winning Game 1. But at the same time, the fact that Giannis came in there and looked pretty freaking normal after hyperextending his knee. We all saw that incredible block that everybody started comparing to LeBron's chase down block in Game 7 of the Warriors Finals. What was more impressive to me was the way he looked like the strongest, toughest player on the floor at times, pushing the Suns' biggest player, DeAndre Ayton, away from the hoop in that first half when he had that push off, get off me, two-hand jam. They won the minutes that Giannis Antetokounmpo was on the floor, surprisingly. The Milwaukee Bucks did. So that is a great sign. The bad thing is they're going to expect more from him. So the fact that Mike Boonholzer played him only 35 minutes is good, I think, for the Bucks that they can play him more. He looks great. Again, they won those minutes, and they can go to him a heck of a lot more. He ended up with only 11 shots, even though he had 20 and 17 and went to the free throw line a bunch. But he looks good. He feels good. Zero air balls from the free throw line. Actually, quickening the pace. At times, the Suns fans, who were counting way too fast, couldn't even get to 10.
That was impressive.
It was impressive. MVP being able to shoot a free throw under 10 seconds. Huge. But the fact that he was pushing off DeAndre Ayton, he played 35 minutes. He had to play at the center spot in the fifth quarter. He had to do a lot. So we can get to the nitty-gritty, but you start with Giannis. That was great. And then the fact that the Bucks were willing to adapt. Mike Boonholzer tried a bunch of defenses on the pick and roll, which we'll get into. The Bucks absolutely stink at game ones. They lost their last one against the Hawks and Trae Young. They definitely adjusted in game two. They lost the one to the Brooklyn Nets in the series before that. Even against the Miami Heat, they won in overtime. So they've only won one game one so far this series. The Suns got a bit of the whistle, free throw discrepancy in this one, and the Bucks missed a bunch of paint shots in the first half that we would have been talking about this game a lot differently if they hit a bunch of those layups. So start there. Obviously, the Suns deeper, stronger, better. But a really good start that Giannis came in there and looked pretty freaking normal. Yeah. I guess all those Twitter doctors were wrong, saying that the hyperextended knee could keep him out for a long period of time. I guess they provided themselves with an out when they said could keep him out a long period of time. But he's back, and I think you just got to go to him more. It's the finals. He's got no choice. They got to go to him more. He is their best player. They're obviously the less deep team. But a good start. Anyways, I think for the Bucks, I know they don't get the W, but who cares? At the same time, game twos, like Steve Kerr always says, is the game to steal. So I think that's what they got looking forward to Thursday.
Yeah, Tass sounding very high on the Milwaukee Bucks despite the loss. And you're right. I mean, Giannis with that spring to his step and what, they threw him a lob in the first 15 seconds, right? And you're like, oh, okay, maybe he is okay. And yeah, 2017, four. Good game. Not great game, but good game for a guy that we thought may be out for the rest of the damn season. But the Suns get the victory and sort of carved the Bucks up there, TK. And it really is the question everybody's asking here after game one. It's like, what defense do you play against this team? Like, what is Budenholzer to do? Is it go small? I mean, it worked a little bit there, I
go
guess.
Go small?
You could say, with Giannis.
You're telling me go small, Skeets? Well, you want to see more Pat Connaughton? You want to see more Bryn Forbes? I do not think going small is the answer. Shocker. Honestly, I think the answer is going to be Giannis Antetokounmpo guarding DeAndre Ayton. I think that should be this change that the Bucks make heading into game two here. And I think Brook Lopez should stay on the court, and I think he should guard Jay Crowder. Make Jay Crowder beat you. If the Suns want to get Brook Lopez involved in actions, then they're bringing Jay Crowder into actions. I don't think that's a problem for a Bucks team that's really good at defense. And, you know, then if it's Giannis, if they want to get Ayton involved in the pick and roll game, then you're bringing Giannis into the play. I think that that's an easy change to make, because to me, play and drop is just asking to get beat by Chris Paul and Devin Booker. You're playing into the Suns' strengths. We saw it last night. Once the Bucks stopped switching, after they were getting torched switching, they had to go to the drop coverage, and that's when Chris Paul really heated up in the third quarter. Also, you can't play Bobby Portis and Brook Lopez at the same time. Simply impossible. Crazy stuff from Bud, but game one, Bud. You know it's going to come out something crazy. But it was embarrassing for the Bucks to see Lopez and Portis just get brought up every single time. Hey, come up here. Come up here. We'll give you a quick bucket here. Brook Lopez slid under Chris Paul for the Zaza at one point. It was just bad. I don't think that the Bucks were going to be able to beat the Suns in game one last night, no matter how they played defense. They tried everything. They tried switching. No luck. They tried drop. No luck. Just got to be a little bit more aggressive at the point of attack. I think Chris Paul has to be guarded by Drew Holiday. Drew has to get over every single screen, and he's got to be going into Giannis, because that's a little bit scarier than going into Brook Lopez hanging out at the 15-foot mark. That's an easy jumper for anybody on the Suns. So, I don't know. I think the Bucks can just be a little bit more aggressive. That, to me, seems to be the adjustment they make heading into these game twos. You know, against the Nets, it was P.J. Tucker just starts fouling Kevin Durant every time up the court. Not going to call it every time. Drew Holiday picked it up against Trae Young in game two against the Hawks. Started fouling him every time up and down the court. They're not going to call it every time. You can get away with it in the playoffs. Get a little bit more physical out there. It looked like the Bucks were just kind of going along with whatever the Suns wanted to do. They've got to be the aggressors if they want to win.
Yeah, Chris Paul really dissected the Bucks there in that third quarter. He made 6 of his 7 shots. 14 of the 16, I believe, came basically just after the most simplest switch you could ever imagine. Just Chris Paul saying, no, I'm going to take Brook Lopez on me now, or I'm going to take Bobby Portis on me now. And yeah, they're going to have to switch up that. But what did you see, or what did the Bucks do? I mean, do you agree with Trey? You say, no, don't panic yet. You know, this has happened to you before. We just saw it in game one of the last series. Trey Young went for 48, and you didn't, you know, Brook Lopez got taken out of that game in game one back in the last round. You know, they were like, had to go away from it. Sort of happened here. They went small with Giannis at the five. But eventually, as the series went on, and yes, Trey got hurt, and that was a big part of it, but Brook found a way to contribute. So do you do that and say, no, we can make this work with him out there. We have to make it work with him out there. Or is it Giannis at the five, which did work a little bit in the second half? They hit some threes, of course, when it was happening. But as Shu pointed out and Trey brought it up, it's like now you have Connaughton or Forbes They got to be out there in the small ball lineups, basically, and the Suns will just target those guys. So what do you do if you're Coach Bud here as you head into game two?
Well, when Chris Paul decides to get those switches, it almost doesn't matter if he gets them or not anyway, because is Chris Middleton going to be able to stop him when he gets into the paint like that? It doesn't really matter. But when Bobby Portis came out, and he came out a couple of times so deep, Chris Paul's like, okay, well, I'm just walking inside here. So it's tough because you need Giannis to guard Chris Paul. You need Giannis to guard Ayton. You need Giannis to guard Bridges. You need Giannis to guard Devin Booker, really. I mean, that's the thing. He's their longest, most athletic, most versatile defender. But if those other guys aren't able to do it, that'll just leave so much work there for Giannis to do. So this was a pretty impressive performance here from Chris Paul. I think that's the thing. We just maybe you don't need to overlook that. In that third quarter, it was winning time, and he just took full advantage of whatever the Bucks gave him. So I do think you need to keep Brook Lopez out there for longer. Now, he tried it in game one by sitting him, and it didn't really work. So at least he's figured that out, I think, Budenholzer going forward, that Lopez needs to be effective, and they can't afford to play such a small lineup with Giannis at the five there, and then you got Bobby, and as you guys are saying, with Bryn and Pat Connaughton, that's just not going to stop the Phoenix Suns at all. And if the Suns going to play DeAndre Ayton out there, they can't have a small body out there on him. They need to have someone. And if that's Giannis defending him, okay, fine. But then those other guys have to make sure they don't get cooked by their opponents as well. It's tough, but it's also just game one. You know, it was game one, and the Suns came in. And I think you could also tell from that game last night, the rest advantage the Suns had. I think they just looked healthier. They looked fresher. And for the Bucks, they just seemed to be a little bit slower. And a lot of those shots that were close, you know, they just seemed to just sort of drop out. So it wasn't a disaster for Milwaukee here. I think they played an okay game. They've certainly got things to work on. But, you know, the biggest question is, of course, how do you basically get the ball out of Chris Paul's hands? Do you double him? Do you trap him to try to do it?
Right.
And hope that it's, you know, don't bring Devin Booker's man off him because, you know, he's going to shoot the ball okay. Maybe you live with whoever's on Jay Crowder to come out and trap him because, really, Jay Crowder had one of his nights last night. He went 0 for 8 from the field, 0 for 5 from downtown. We know he's a very, very streaky shooter at the best of times anyway. But that's maybe the better strategy. It's like, let's have, as Trey sort of alluded to there, let's make it that Jay Crowder is the one who's getting these shots and getting these looks, because
sure,
Chris Paul is not going to miss many of those mid-rangers. He's just too good at that. And I think, you know, anyone one-on-one, that's what I was saying at the start, anyone who he goes one-on-one with, Chris Paul has got the advantage because he's so good. So that's going to be the change, I think, for Budenholzer. It's like, it's got to be someone other than Chris Paul or Devin Booker. I mean, Devin Booker didn't shoot well from three last night, but that doesn't really matter because he was so effective everywhere else. He got to the free throw line, and he just looks comfortable in the mid-range game as well. So some tough questions for Budenholzer, and not easy answers because, you know, the Suns move that ball really well as well. And guys are ready to shoot. Cam Johnson played well last night. I thought Bridges played well as well. They understand that if the ball's moving around, their job is to knock down the open shots.
Yeah, what went bad for the Suns in game one? I mean, Jay Crowder was bad Jay Crowder.
Well, in terms of shooting the ball,
I guess Sarge going down with an injury. I mean, yeah, that was bad. Yeah.
I mean, Crowder, you know, have finished with 9 rebounds and he finished a plus 19. You can take that any way you want, but I didn't think he was actually, you know, harmful for his team out there.
I thought
he just couldn't hit those shots.
Yeah, yeah. And they couldn't hit a lot of threes, I guess, would be the third thing. It'd be Crowder not hitting a shot. They weren't that great from three-point land. They could get better, of course, and then the Saric injury. I get what you're saying, and like Tass got this started. Like, okay, it's just game one. Let's not overreact if you're a Milwaukee fan or even just a fan of this series going longer. Though the Suns, my God, like they can play better is the problem. Booker's not going to probably shoot. What did he shoot from three? Did he even hit one? Was he one for eight or
something?
One for
eight, I think he finished.
Yeah, so that's, you know, unlikely again. And I thought he was awesome, like you said, Lee. Like, his playmaking is, like, leaps and bounds better than it was, like, just a couple of years ago. This guy, he just did not have that in his arsenal. And maybe it's because he wasn't playing with players that he felt comfortable to pass it to, and that's a big part. I thought he was great.
Not a big Dragan Bender fan, Skeetsy?
No, I hate Dragan Bender, actually. Once had him on the show. Somebody told me he was a Friends fan. Turned out that was a lie.
He just has friends that he likes.
Oh, that's what it was.
Yeah, yeah.
But, yeah, no, it's, I guess... It's funny to hear everyone talk about this through. Like, it's like, okay, this could still be a series. But at the same time, I mean, you're just like, oh, my God. Like, Chris Paul and Devin Booker, they're sort of just the worst-case scenario against this Bucks team, for what to figure out to do defensively. But I'm with you. Starting with Drew Holiday,
he has
to just play Chris Paul at this point. I think you have to. And he's got to fight through everything, and it's going to be hell. But try and blow up these plays a little bit and make it not so easy for Chris Paul to dissect them, Tess.
Yeah. Yeah, the thing is, going back to the Hawks series, Trae Young lit up the Bucks for 48 in game one. The Bucks came back in game two and were far more aggressive, just chasing him around. Drew was far more aggressive, yeah. Hunting him down from behind. Brooke was far more aggressive getting up there. The thing is, the Suns got two of those guys. Yep, so that's the difference here. Yeah, you could just give it to either one of those guys. But, the Bucks really tried to switch this up from the beginning. Budenholzer's got to get a little bit of credit. They started with Tucker on Chris Paul so they could get the switch going and Tucker on Ayton as soon as Ayton would come for the screen setting. So he would be behind. So that wasn't pretty to start, no doubt. At least they were trying something. But yeah, there's a lot of other adjustments to make, and that put Drew on Chris Paul. Now, I think he kind of let Chris Paul go at the beginning of games into that mid-range. He didn't hit a shot in the first quarter because he wants to get everybody involved. I think you do play a little drop in the first quarter just to mess things up. But I think you got to be able to just do those switches of defense a little bit more on the fly. You know, don't go quarter by quarter. I think that, you know, there was multiple defensive schemes that they threw at the Suns, but it was just a little too slow. I think, you know, they started obviously switching. Then the second quarter, we decided, all right, let's drop this thing into the third quarter. Then let's go small in the fourth quarter. I mean, I think they just have to just try and mess with Chris Paul a little bit from possession to possession. There was one possession Drew did fight after a timeout. He did fight over, and he was there. And then they switched really late, and it was a beautiful thing. Then the next play, the Suns adjust. They adapt, and they run a double screen. Gorgeous stuff from Monty Williams. I mean, it's some nice chess maneuvers, but I think you do put Drew there to stop Chris Paul. I mean, it really is. It's tough. It's pick your poison for the Milwaukee Bucks. But again, I think if they hit some frickin' layups in there, Brook Lopez had 5 offensive rebounds early in this game, couldn't get a putback. Chris Middleton missed one inside. Drew Holiday has to be better. He missed one inside. If they hit a few of those little shots inside, we're talking about a different game, and we're witnessing what I'm getting at here with the Brook Lopez offensive rebounds. The bigger team is the Milwaukee Bucks. They should be able to score some of those inside. So they showed their size. They showed that they can bang inside, that they can get offensive rebounds. But yeah, like Lee said, then they decided not to get back in fast break situations. They're kind of down on themselves or something. But instead of being a 6 or 8 point game, this should have been a lot closer throughout the first half. And then we're talking about a different scenario. But yeah, Brookie is slowy, no doubt. But as soon as they play a little bit harder, I think things change a little bit, like game two of that Hawks series. But again, it's tough with the Suns team. I mean, they've got so many weapons. But yeah, making Crowder and Mikal Bridges beat you a little bit more helps. But then you got a guy like Cam Johnson who comes off the bench. I don't think he's ever missed a shot. I mean, they are the deeper team. They've got the best player off the bench in this series in campaign. They probably got the second best player off the bench in this series in Cam Johnson over Bryn Forbes and Pat Connaughton. So you got to expect more from Giannis Antetokounmpo, which is a lot. You're asking him to do a frickin' lot, a ton in this series. But the Bucks are a top-heavy team right now. They need him a lot.
Yeah, it would be awesome if Giannis could draw a bunch of fouls, because I think he's got a little bit more to give in the tank as well for game two. Like you're saying, Tass, only 11 shots. He played 35 minutes, but we saw with the post-up on Ayton where he puts him in the basket and then dunks on him. That was awesome. The chase down block, that was incredible. We're seeing the explosion there, but he also was coming back after, you know, a week off of basketball. Hopefully in game two, he's able to, you know, be the attacking Giannis that we're used to, put some pressure on the rim. Because I felt like he left a lot of points on the board, specifically in transition. Like, it looked like Giannis had maybe a 3-on-3. He's got the ball at half court. He's bringing it up, but probably doesn't trust his leg yet quite enough to attack the basket like we're used to Giannis doing, Euro stepping and getting to the hoop. So I think he can be better. And I think if he gets some fouls on DeAndre Ayton, then the Suns are going to be in trouble with Saric going down last night. I don't think we're going to be seeing a whole bunch of Frank Kaminsky for the Suns, because that was a dreadful experience for us Lyle, Illinois fans out there. But that would be huge. Doing anything to kind of stop Ayton. Giannis just needs to be better. Drew Holiday needs to be better. They need to play like it's the NBA Finals. Drew, I don't know, man. When Giannis is on the court, he doesn't feel like he knows where to go sometimes. It feels like there's just too many people in the way for him to be aggressive, go into the hoop. It feels like Drew Holiday's best games come when Giannis is on the bench, but they need both of them if they're going to win this series.
One thing about Ayton real quickly,
we keep saying like, and it's right, like try and get him in foul trouble, try and get him in foul trouble, try and get him in foul trouble. He doesn't get in foul trouble. He's never even had five fouls in the entire playoffs. It's amazing.
He's doing good.
Like he's really, really, of course, impressed us and a lot of people, I think, just how incredible he's been on both ends. I thought he was a monster last night, and I know we'll get to Chris Paul stealing something from Big Ayton there in this game, but his screening and his role and his slips, his cuts. I mean, he had that second quarter where he just ran the floor looking like young David Robinson, just beating everybody down there, easy layup. He had a jump hook over Tucker where he's like too small. Like he's just been awesome all postseason. And again, we keep saying like, well, get him in foul trouble, but he doesn't do it. He just doesn't. He hasn't even had five fouls this entire postseason in one game, let alone foul out at six. So I think, you know, easier said than done, I guess, at this point with him, because he's smart. He doesn't do a lot of like just swiping and hacking. He's like, sometimes, you know, it's smarter to give it up here if you have to.
Yeah, he's got a pretty high basketball IQ for a young guy, because on the offensive end, he doesn't seem to take shots that aren't really in his range or aren't part of his game. So he's really worked hard on both ends there. But speaking of the fouls, I think Chris Middleton probably has a case last night that he got a pretty tough whistle out there. He had zero free throw attempts. And there was plenty of times I thought that he had a legit case that he could have at least been to the free throw line. So that also could be something going forward, because I'm sure the Bucks will make mention of that over the next day or so, that they didn't really seem to get a lot of those friendly whistles. And maybe the Suns did, home court, you know, for game one, all that sort of stuff. But I didn't think Chris Middleton was bad last night. I thought he played well. I thought he was aggressive. But sometimes, again, when those shots don't drop, they sort of just, there's a bit of a lid on the basket and you don't get the free throws. It sort of makes it a little bit harder as well to get scores, because they didn't get any of those easy baskets out there. So that's also something to watch going forward, because, you know, the other point I was going to make as well just then was Drew Holiday at times looks extremely casual out there in the way that he passes the ball and the way that he just sort of handles the ball, because Phoenix is a fantastic team at really taking care of the basketball, protecting that basketball. I think it starts with Chris Paul, who's an incredible ball handler, and I think the other Suns players, you know, sort of feed off that. Whereas the Bucks, a couple of times, like Drew Holiday lost one, I can't remember who stole it off him, and they went down. It was a crucial part of the game in that fourth quarter, and it was like, that was not playoff basketball intensity from Drew Holiday sort of keeping control of the ball out there. So, and he does take a couple of shots that sort of almost seem lazy bailout shots as well. So he needs to focus a little bit more, because he's so important to what they do at both ends of the floor. But if you're going to be you know, just cruising along and strolling out there, that's not going to help the Bucks. So I would like to see that adjustment from him in game two. It's just a lot more intense, a lot more focus.
What is it, a happy hour, Drew Holiday? This ain't casual time, man. Big it up. I'm with you. The Drew Holiday thing is always a conundrum. He is. He's the biggest question mark in the game for the Milwaukee Bucks. But as Trey said, he sometimes doesn't know where he's going with Giannis on the floor. He looked, you know, great towards the end of this Hawks series without Giannis on there. The good thing is, even though I think, you know, Giannis should play as many minutes as possible, you know Bud is going to sit Giannis. And so there is time. 6 minutes into the game, but it's like clockwork. Giannis sits down. Drew Holiday, it's your time to shine. He's definitely got to be decent. I mean, he's just got to be, you know, he's setting guys up, and I think we'll see a different Drew in game two, defensively and offensively. Just gotta be that guy if they're gonna win this thing. If they're gonna fight, because they can't get outplayed in the backcourt like that. Middleton definitely picked it up in the second half. When he gets going, it's a thing of beauty to watch him score his 29. It's like a quiet 29. You know, he just keeps doing his thing. So if he's gonna score and Giannis gonna perform, but they're not a deep team. Yeah, they need Drew to show.
Yeah, they need Drew. What we saw in, you know, game five and six of the last series for sure. And even turning it on super late in game seven against the Nets. Remember, he was garbage all game and then suddenly caught fire. You're right. I mean, you can't have 10 points. You can't be 4-14 and just like have no sort of impact at all as the lead guy, as the point guard on that team. It was a bad, bad Drew Holiday game for the Bucks, unfortunately. Was there any unheralded stars in this one? We obviously talking about all the stars on both sides, but like, is it one of the Cams to you, Trey? Is it somebody else on the Suns that impressed you and maybe more of a limited role?
Yeah, Lee touched on it quickly. Cam Johnson was great last night. 10 points, 2 steals, 2 assists, 2 three-pointers, 3 rebounds. He ripped Giannis in the fourth quarter. It was impressive. And as we're seeing, you know, we're getting into game 2 here, and we're already like, I don't know if you're going to be able to play Bobby Portis. Don't know if you're going to be able to play Pat Connaughton. For the Suns, it's just Frank Kaminsky. Like, that guy's not going to get any time, but he probably wouldn't have got any time if Saric doesn't go down last night. Meanwhile, it feels like everybody on the Suns that runs out there is going to contribute, but except for the Clippers, usually role players play better at home, so I think it's encouraging if you're the Suns that one of your young guys who's playing in his first finals game, I guess not that young, him and Giannis are almost the same age, even though it's only year 2 for Cam Johnson, but to show up and to hit the shots that you need, it was clutch stuff.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, you're getting 4 three-pointers off of your bench there in a game where you can't hit many to begin with. From the 2 Cams, both splashing 2, and then Torrey Craig gave him, what, his normal, like, 14 or 15 minutes. And then there was the Frank Kaminsky minutes that, I mean, he didn't do anything. You actually look at the box score. He literally did nothing. He has the offers there. But, yeah, the Dario Saric.
He got scored on 8 times, I think.
Yeah, it's true. And somehow ends the plus minus is 0 somehow. But very weird. I don't think we'll see a lot of them. And they might be forced to when Ayton has to sit at some point. Though Ayton's, what, 22 years old?
Yeah, exactly.
Doesn't foul like we said. I mean, if anyone's going to be able to play heavy, heavy minutes, you would think someone like that, the athletic freak that he is, that he can play those heavy minutes. Yeah. Maybe he tires out as the series goes on, but I sort of doubt it. You can play him 38, 39 minutes a game. No problem there, Lele. Any other unheralded stars? Or sort of named them all, I guess.
Yeah, no, I just think, again, campaign, you saw his pace. He gets out there and he really pushes that ball. He hit a couple of threes, but he was also penetrating as well, getting inside. So he does mix up that game, and I just think that energy boost that he gives them off the bench, the Bucks don't have anyone to sort of counter that. I mean, Jeff T came out, hit a three, was feeling good, and then he fell over on the next play. But that's the sort of difference we were talking about yesterday, is that the Suns bench players can really come out and just sort of just boost that team, keep them going. Whereas I feel with the Bucks, again, with Bryn Forbes and Teague, Budenholzer's almost just hanging on a little bit. You know, he's trying to sort of buy some time, rather than Monty Williams, I think, can feel confident that those guys are really going to sort of continue to play and continue the flow that they get from their starting lineup. So that is going to also be something to watch going forward, because, yeah, Budenholzer may have to make this a very tight rotation here, only go sort of 6 or 7 deep. And even those guys who do come out, if they're not performing, they won't be out there for very long. So, but that's fine. It's a finals. I mean, that you play your 5 best players as much as you can. I mean, if that's what it takes to win, that's fine. It's just, you know, those sorts of things can potentially catch up to you in a deeper series if it goes longer because, again, you know, Monty, I think, can just trust his bench a little more than Budenholzer can right now.
Yeah, no doubt. One scary thing I'll mention. Yeah, watching Bobby Portis out there on the perimeter, guarding Chris Paul. I mean, this is not his forte. What are we doing here? What are we playing?
What are we running there?
It's like a dance out there that Bobby Portis is trying to poke Chris Paul on the perimeter. That was gross. But on the other end, the Suns campaign, coming in, you don't get a break if you're the Bucks. You know, Chris Paul, Devin Booker, one of them goes to the bench, and then campaign comes in, and he's banging home threes. We got a heat check from campaign in the NBA Finals. That was amazing. The Suns are so good. Let me say one random thing about Frank Kaminsky. Apparently the Bucks had a viewing party in Pfizer Forum, and when he came into the game, huge cheers. I was told by Frank Madden and Kane Pittman of the Locked On podcast, because he's a Lyle, Illinois boy, but that's not right.
He took the University of Wisconsin Badgers to the national championship game, national player of the year. So they love him. This is a tough spot for Bucks fans. Are they going to cheer against Frank Kaminsky? Not a chance.
Man, they know who Frank Kaminsky is. That's great.
Yeah,
that's
they great. Do. And we may not see him for the rest of the series, so I'm glad they got excited when he came in. Any other random notes from Game 1? Trey, I alluded to the...
The beef thief?
Yeah, the beef thief,
Yeah, monster game for DeAndre Ayton. Could have been a legendary game were it not for Chris Paul. 22 points and 19 rebounds. Should have been 20 rebounds, though, because look what happens on this very last possession. I think it's Bryn Forbes gets a desperation three up, Ayton has the rebound until Chris Paul rips it out of his hands. Look at his reaction right away. Oh,
yeah.
Oh, I'm sorry, guys. I'm sorry. I also love Devin Booker. What are you doing, man? But my favorite part about this whole thing, immediately after the buzzer sounds, Chris Paul goes to the scorer's table trying to convince him that DeAndre Ayton should get that 20th rebound. Hey, give it to him. Give it to him. It was a controlled tip. It was a controlled tip. It was just me trying to do it. I also love here at the end, Booker comes in, he sees Ayton, he's like, hey man, he just stole your rebound, didn't he? Yeah, he did. Even post-game, DeAndre Ayton said, definitely, Chris Paul stole my rebound, but very funny. Too bad though, because this would have been the first 2020 game in the NBA Finals since Shaquille O'Neal in 2004. Since 1986, it's only Shaq and Tim Duncan that have put up 2020 games in the NBA Finals. Chris Paul, man! I know you like to secure the game. Let the big guys get the rebound, buddy.
Oh, man.
Stealing rebounds? Come on.
Oh, man. So do you think, like, I don't know, JD, if you could play that first part again. You think Chris Paul, like, taps it out of Ayton's hands? Because I thought 100%. Ayton sort of just dropped it. Okay.
Ayton's got some it right there.
He's got it left hand for sure. He's going to get
We've watched, there's no question that Ayton would have gotten a credit for the rebound anyway. You know, sometimes you just see a guy touch it, and it's like, the first touch is almost the guy who gets the rebound. So I'm a little surprised. Giannis was also flirting with the beef. We almost double beefed out there. Wow, what a start. What a start.
Double beef in game one of the finals. No wedgie, unfortunately. That's okay, though.
No.
Still got time. Hey, Lee, you got Brooke Lopez winning the jump ball after a re-jump. You got that part right.
Yeah. What about the Phoenix Suns, though? They set a record shooting 24 consecutive free throws they make. They're going to go 26 for 26. Jay Crowder, with 24 seconds to go, it just bops out there. They would have been 26 for 26 at the free throw line. Practice your free throws, kids. Oh, man. How important, though? I mean, what the game margin was around, what was it, 11, 12 points? Oh, no, it was more than that. It was 13 in the end. And the free throw advantage was 16 there to Phoenix because they made them. I mean, I mentioned a little bit earlier. They only got 16 free throws themselves, the Bucks. I think they were a little bit stiff last night with some of those calls. But still, Phoenix got there and they knocked them in, and that's what's important.
Yeah, it got to be a 7-point game there in the fourth quarter. It was like, well, okay, this is not over after, you know, you're watching the game, you're like, Phoenix has been in control this whole damn thing. And then you're like, oh, Bucks hit a couple threes in the fourth. You're like, whoa, this is a 3-possession game here. But then they turned it on. I think they finished on a 17-11 close there to the fourth quarter. They were the much better team and deservedly win game one. And man, keep showing the Suns in four bros now over there on the side going crazy with their long locks. Oh man, every crowd shot in Phoenix this postseason has been... it's been amazing, the people that are going to watch these games. Apparently, it was frantic energy in that building, and alcohol, El Vino did flow, apparently, too, people were saying. It was a party, and why not? Haven't had a finals game in a long time, Tass.
Yeah, it was cool. I didn't mind those cameras on those bros. They were giving it every time. They were feeling it. No alcohol in the shot. No drinking at all. They were they're up. I mean, if you're behind those dudes, you can't sit down. You also have to be up and ready to go.
I mean, it was loud. Even Breen was saying, like, early in the game, like, you could barely hear the whistle.
Yeah.
There was a couple plays. There was a play where, like, Booker, he missed, then he got the offensive rebound that he thought he got, and he flexed because he was, like, doing work inside. But it was, like, the play had been called dead. Even called, like, a foul had been called. And it was, like, oh, he probably couldn't even hear it because that crowd was hyped. And then, you know, we got the Deer District up in Milwaukee. They had a bunch of people in their arena. Like, the crowds are going to be awesome in this. I mean, maybe it's because we didn't have crowds last year in the finals with the bubble, but both just rabid fan bases, which makes for an awesome viewing experience for sure at home. Any other random notes, Lee, that do you want to add to this?
Nah, caught your eye? The free throws, man. I was sitting there just like, they're going to be perfect.
No.
I think that happened in a game against maybe the Jazz as well. They were like 19 for 19, and it was like 20 seconds to go. And I'm going to check that out. I think it was Crowder as well who missed one then. They could have stayed perfect for the night.
Oh, my God.
Stop messing with those free throws, JC.
Bullseye tip, Trey, very close to your, I think you had 909? Is that what you were going with? It was pretty close. Man, that final commercial break went forever.
Yeah. I was feeling good. It was 907. I was like, ooh, here we go. We might be looking good. But no, we had a little pause to build the anticipation.
Oh, my God.
What did we end up starting at, 935?
It was 9/11 or 9/12. Okay. I went with 9/11 because we're on a bit of a delay when we're watching on TV, and it just clicked over to 9/12 for me here. I actually had the official clock up on the old browser, and I was like, it's probably 9/11 when they tipped that thing. 6/11 there, West Coast time. Not too bad, you know. It's all right with for a 9 o'clock start. We can't start 15-20 minutes in. These things go pretty late.
Well, your clock sponsored by Tiso or what? Yeah. Got the official. I felt like the breaks were taking a long time, and I actually hated myself in the first break. I was like, this is nice. I'm reading all these comments. I thought Twitter was flowing. Like, you know, take your time. Like, I hated myself, though. You know, I'd rather watch basketball than read Twitter. But I don't know. Maybe I was just in a good mood. Hearing fans again compared to last year was something else. I literally had to rewind multiple times because I didn't hear a whistle. It's like, who is it called on? Which ref is calling it from across the floor? Kudos to the Suns fans. They were awesome. Both arenas, I think, will be popping in this series.
Final question here before we take a break, Trey. Finals MVP rankings after one game. 1, 2, 3, how would you have it on your ballot right now after 48 minutes of action?
I'm going Chris Paul, DeAndre Ayton, Devin Booker. Though honestly, 2 and 3, feel free to switch either one of them. I think it's going to be hard for anybody on the Suns to win Finals MVP after game one, after the way Chris Paul played.
Yeah,
he's going to have the most narrative heat behind him. But I think there's 9 voters. Maybe they'll split it 3 ways. Because, I mean, honestly, all 3 of them were great last night. But, you know, I always think back to Kobe Bryant, 6-for-24 in a clinching game, and he still won Finals MVP. They want to give it to Chris Paul. And honestly, he deserves it. And we'll see how the rest of the series plays out. But after one night, CP3 is the guy.
Yeah.
Look, that Chris Paul jumper can come and go. That's the thing. He's not Crowder streaky, but he never missed a jumper versus the Nuggets in that series. Like it felt like it. I think he shot 67% from mid-range against those four games against Denver. But then the first 3 games, right, against the Clippers, Lee. I mean, he went ice cold. He was not hitting them with the consistency that he usually does.
Yeah.
So there it is. So, you know, obviously then he finishes that series with an unbelievable game 6 where he can't miss, and then he keeps it going here in game 1. But, you know, I mean, look, I guess I'm getting at maybe you continue to play it the way you did and you just hope Chris Paul can't hit those. I mean, God, it'd be tough.
Yeah.
But
you figure one game he's going to probably not just drain them with that consistency, and it'll probably be in Milwaukee for game 3 or 4. You know, that's what you're hoping for if you're the Bucks. But really, the big question is who's going to get the Hubie Brown Finals MVP vote after game 1? I'm probably saying campaign. I think.
Oh, wow.
You know, because you know Hubie loves those guys who just come out there and work hard like that. He likes to swerve a little. So.
I think DeAndre Ayton would be the Hubie Brown pick.
Yes.
Maybe, yeah.
Yeah. It's taken Hubie back to the days when a big man mattered. And this guy's like flirting with big beefs and like running the floor and doing
looks
all
like
the
Michael
work.
Cage out there.
Yeah, exactly. We'll keep this going throughout the finals.
Right.
Who will Hubie Brown be voting for the NBA Finals MVP? Maybe it's Chris Paul too. Maybe we're overthinking it. All right, so I'm with you on the rankings right now, TK. Chris Paul 1, 8, and 2, and I think Booker sort of a distant third actually after those two guys. Though he played a fine game. He just
27-6. No big deal.
Yeah, exactly. Which is scary. I mean, that is scary for the Bucks. Like, he's going to have, like we said, a couple 30-point games in this series. I just don't see how he doesn't. Because guy's a bucket. That's what it is.
Did he win that prop bet?
No, he didn't. So he had 20. What did he finish with? 26?
27-6.
27.
And it was 28.5. And he had he had like 27 with like 6 minutes to go, 5 minutes to go. And he took one. He didn't. Well, he wasn't involved in a lot of the action, actually. It was obviously Chris Paul orchestrating a bunch of it. But he took a 3 that would have done it and sort of clanked it, if I remember correctly.
Mine was combined points and assists, 32.5. 33 combined.
So you got it. Yeah,
that one cashed.
Well done. He was playmaking, man. I said that earlier. He's not bad at it. Like, you sort of just think, I don't know, maybe I'm still even stuck in this idea. Like, he's got blinders on. He's score. He'll kick it to a corner, man, in stride. Like, he finds his guy. So anyway, great game from him, despite not hitting a bunch of threes. And he will have some 30s in this series, I think. That's a lock. All right.
I think, hold on, one prop, an amazing prop, since we love our man Cam Stewart. I guess his prop was...
Okay.
PJ Tucker 4.5 points in the first quarter or something. He wrote Tucker 5 points in first quarter. Yes.
Oh my God. Come on.
I don't know. I mean, that sounds crazy.
No way. The line was Tucker 4.5 points.
Yeah.
In the first quarter.
Maybe his.
Yeah. It was probably like 2.5 points, probably, wasn't it?
No. Yeah. Well, I guess he. Yeah, maybe 2.5, and he hit two baskets.
Oh, that's sicko stuff, right?
That's just Cam Stewart, baby.
That's how he rolls, man. That's how he eats those chicken wings, man. Make that money, Cam.
PJ Tucker did have incredible. A sick reverse layup in the lane in the first quarter. I don't remember ever seeing PJ Tucker make a layup in traffic. That was crazy. He did shoot another one a little later on, like you mentioned, Tass. Missed that. I don't know that there are a lot of games this season where PJ Tucker has taken 2 2-pointers. Can't be that many.
That's really not a lot, no, for sure. All right, anything else from game one? We'll obviously start looking ahead to game two in detail on tomorrow's show, on Thursday's show, because game two tips tomorrow night. Anything else to add, gentlemen? Okay, let's take a break, and then we'll get to the up-down report.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 U.S.-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day, or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service anytime. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service that you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 U.S.-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service at any time. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
Back with No Dunks, right into the up-down report.
Prepare your tubies. It's the up-down report.
All right, first one. Alice Cooper, she was not, but we got quite the rendition of the U.S. national anthem last night. So, JD, I want you to get us started. Up or down on Judith Hill's Game 1 national anthem?
I mean, I'm up. I thought it was great. I thought it was perfect. I'm going to give it the old chef's kiss.
Oh, wow.
Because I don't know if it was just, you know, everybody's still a buzz from 4th of July or, you know, game one, NBA finals, national TV. And normally I'm with Lee. I don't love the anthem before games in general. Like, I don't think it has to happen every single time. Lee's talked about this at length, and I agree with him. But, you know, it was appropriate. And Judith Hill, I actually found it kind of stirring in a way, just because full arena. It was the first anthem I've seen at a sporting event since last year, I guess, in the bubble. So it was great, I thought. And, you know, as far as her performance, I thought it was awesome. Like, it was short, which I liked. It was disciplined, not too many. I wouldn't call them runs, you know, vocal runs. I would call them more flourishes, which I enjoyed. and then to add to that, it was beautifully shot. Like, the arena looked great. I love the stage area. You know, I hope they keep that. I like not seeing them on the court. I don't know why. Like, I just think it looks better. It's more official. It's more commanding. Not that her performance needed to be more commanding. It was like those first few bars of the anthem, I feel like you could hear a pin drop in the place, right? And then she hits the bridge or the chorus or whatever, and the place goes nuts. And it was awesome. And, you know, the shots of the players on the court with the quote-unquote 8K camera looked awesome. It was just great. I loved it. I was surprised at how much I enjoyed the anthem.
So, for those that don't know, Judith Hill was featured in the Michael Jackson documentary, This Is It. She was a singer at the memorial service. She did Heal the World. She was also featured in the documentary 20 Feet from Stardom about backup singers because of that link. And Lee, did you know this? She was a contestant on season 4 of The Voice.
Only because I Googled her and read about it. But
maybe
no,
you'd seen that
I didn't. But I agree with JD. I thought that was one of the anthems that was actually done really well. I think, too, it was shot well, JD. I noticed that. Whoever's producing this is doing a pretty good job here. Or directing, you know, it's all sort of the combined teamwork there. But, yeah, they nailed it. They knocked it out of the park. Now we just don't need it for every game, okay? We've got one really good anthem. If it goes seven...
Just maybe play it again.
Why not? We saw down at the Fortress when they did the half-court shot with the fan. They pre-recorded that. You've got a great anthem now. Just replay that one. If it goes game seven, we can have another anthem. We just don't need it for every... We don't need it again in 48... Well, it's not even 48. It's like 36 hours time from
right,
now. So, but yeah, really good job. So she put on a fantastic performance there.
I mean, who's ever doing it for game two or beyond,
yeah,
I'm shitting my pants right
exactly.
now. Like, I would not want to follow that.
Exactly. So.
Yeah, that would be a tough act to follow, no doubt. Tass, Trey, thumbs up, I'm assuming, on the performance?
Well, I'm just happy for JD, the first basketball game he tunes into since the bubble, and he gets a performance like that.
Hang on, you were at the Fortress for a game, though, JD. Where were you for the anthem for that one?
I was standing respectfully with my hat in over my heart. Yeah. I can't remember who sang it, though.
Yeah.
Good point.
I was there for... Did Music Soul Child sing? He sang one of the anthems.
I think so.
I can't remember which game it was. I was there for one of them. But
I'm with you, JD, in that, you know, last year the bubble changed things, and we got to have the referees talk to us through the microphone. That little change just carried over to this season. You're talking about the stage, because generally the rule is, the COVID rule is, I believe, in each arena you can't have them have like halftime performances or in arena performances on the floor. So maybe this does stay. I will say, though, like, some of the arenas that don't have these 8K cameras, sometimes it looks horrendous. Maybe it's because the NBA Finals, the cameras look amazing, but sometimes it looks like we're back at Ryerson University, and it looks like a student production at times. Like, the lighting isn't good.
Yeah.
So they've got to improve that big time. But yeah, so some of the things are awesome. Like, we go down to State Farm Arena, and they've got the in-quarter entertainment. They've got, whether it's, you know, Big Boy or somebody hanging with the crowd, like, they're literally in the crowd because they can't be on the floor. And that's amazing.
Yeah.
I mean, some of that stuff is so, so cool. So, yeah, some of that, I'd love to see that stick for sure.
Trey, thumbs up, thumbs down?
Good thumbs singing. Up. Good singing out there.
Were you emotional? Did you stand at home?
No,
you didn't stand at home.
No, but I saw it. Basketball's a game of runs. The anthem is a game of flourishes.
All right, next one here. NBA Commissioner Adam Silver said Tuesday it's the league's expectation that the play-in tournament used to determine the 7th and 8th seeds in each conference this season will continue in 2021-22. Yeah, next season. So we've talked about this a little bit before, but Lee, up or down on keeping the play-in tournament?
Double thumbs up from me. Why not? Why wouldn't they keep it? I think it's been a resounding success in the two seasons that we've seen it so far. Not only, I think, of the games, we had that incredible Lakers-Warriors game in the Western Conference this season, but I think in terms of keeping the interest and excitement alive for those teams battling to make the playoffs. We saw a great run here from the Washington Wizards at the end of the season here. They got into that play-in tournament and then went on to make the playoffs. So I think there's no reason why the NBA would possibly turn away from something like this that has, I believe, been extremely successful and worked as planned in both aspects. As far as, now look, we did get a couple of stinkers from the Indiana Pacers and the Hornets. Okay, fine. We're not going to get every single game that is a playing game come down to the wire. But overall, I think it's working by both parts, keeping interest for the season, and then the intrigue as to which team will sneak in to the playoffs. And at some point, some team's going to go on that run. They're going to get into the play-in tournament, and they're going to upset one of the higher seeded teams. So there's no reason for me to think they would turn away from this right now.
You agree, Tass?
Yeah, I think for the first season in a long time, there wasn't a lot of talk about tanking during the entire season. Now, OKC were the tankers that took all the tanking talk. But I think at the beginning of last season, there was enough incentive for 29 teams to be going for those 20 playoff spots, call it whatever you want, but there's 20 spots. I don't think any team outside OKC was tanking at the beginning of the season. So that's is a big positive for the league. I mean, one of the black marks that we've always talked about is they gotta get some way, somehow, to incentivize enough teams to not tank. So yeah, I think that part of it is huge. Plus, we got the couple weeks of basketball there. Now, I don't know. There could be some tweaks, shorten the season a little bit. I mean, do we have to see 82 games?
No.
No, probably not. For a little elimination game to, you know, you play 82 games to get bopped out in one game. It's baseball-esque. I think we could shorten it a bit. But, overall, great start. Maybe a couple tweaks.
Trey?
Double thumbs up. I'm just like Lee here. I thought it was awesome. And the crazy thing about the play-in tournament is, yeah, there's the tournament at the end, which, like you're saying, Lee, we had a dud from the Pacers. We had a dud from the Hornets. On the flip side, we got LeBron versus Steph. Got that crazy shot from LeBron almost at half court. Lost to the ether forever, but we remember it because we were there. But the other thing about it, the games at the end, they obviously matter, but it makes... The tournament is really like the last month of the season, right? Like, that's the thing. The race for it and keeping everybody involved is so huge that at the end of it, yeah, you got to see who actually pulls out the wins in the game, in the tournament, to see who makes the playoffs. But just having that stretch down at the end is giving, you know, young teams who don't really have anything to play for, it's giving them games that actually matter. It's putting them in almost a playoff sort of atmosphere where every single win matters. You got to perform every single night. It's good for the competition in the league, and it's good for us to have stuff to talk about because, like Tess is saying, there are teams that were tanking down the stretch, right? But we didn't care at all. It's like, Houston, see you later. Nobody cares if you're losing a bunch of games. You traded your best player. That was the point. The Thunder sat down there, guys. Nobody cared. That was the point. Even the Raptors, they tanked to get out of the play-in tournament. Nobody cares because we actually have things that matter. When half the league gives up, that's a problem. When only five teams gives up, that's okay.
Yeah, I see the stream team generally thumbs up on this, continuing the play-in tournament, but a lot of people saying, hey, let's just not go overboard and have also a mid-season tournament. Because remember, Lee Silver had talked about that. He wanted that whole, like, soccer angle, football angle of, like, oh, maybe we have another tournament, you know, halfway through the season. Now, I don't think he said anything about that last night in the press conference, but yeah. Do you agree with, like, okay, let's just roll with this. If we can shorten the season, I don't think he's going to do that. I think we're going to go back to 82 here. So maybe that has an impact on this play-in tournament. Who knows? We'll see. But do you want a mid-season tournament as well, or are you good with just the play-in at the end of the season to determine the 7th and 8th seeds?
Look, Adam Silver wanted the play-in tournament, and he got it. He wants this extra sort of soccer-style tournament. I think it is just a matter of time before we get it. I think whether it only lasts a season or two or three maybe, I think it is going to happen, and I think it is going to be a bit of a compromise. It's like to the owners. You're not going to lose out on your money per se by cutting down the home and away games, the regular season games, from 82 to a figure, let's say 75 or something like that. In exchange, we're going to give you this mid-season tournament that's going to have incentives that make it worth your while to try to compete and to win this, whether that's draft picks, whether that's some other form of, you know, priority seeding, maybe something like that in the playoffs. I don't know exactly what it is, but I think it is just a matter. I think because of the coronavirus situation, you know, for last season and this season, already those seasons being interrupted, I think it's probably delayed it by a year or two. But I think it's just a matter of when that happens, not if it happens. I think probably not next season, because I think there's no international games as well for next season. I think Adam Silver said that yesterday. But I would be surprised if starting in the, say, 22-23 season, we don't have some sort of, you know, shortened regular season in exchange for some sort of mid-season tournament. I think it's just it's a matter of time before it happens.
But the tournament could be a part of the regular season too, right?
Yeah, I mean, it could be, yeah.
It don't have to be one or the other.
The main point I'm trying to make is you're going to play as close to 82 games, whether or not that is an adjustment of the regular season or not, because the owners aren't going to want to miss out on that revenue. But Adam Silver has been persuasive. And the fact that this play-in tournament has worked, I think, gives Adam Silver a lot more sort of power to be able to then present this new idea to the owners to see if that also works. So, it's going to happen, yeah. I believe.
Yeah, it's definitely more drastic, some sort of mid-season tournament than what we have here with the play-in tournament, which is really just like incentivizing these teams to, like, still, hey, keep trying to win games and try and have a chance to be the 9th or 10th seed, to have a chance to be actually in the playoffs. But yeah, who knows what he has in mind even for this potential mid-season tournament. It's tough to get too worked up about it until you sort of know what the actual details are. I'm hesitant to think it would work all that well because it's like, what it really, you get down to like, what would they be playing for? Like, why would they care? What does it matter? And we don't know the answers to that. If any Trey, so I guess we'll just wait to see.
Yeah, we shall see. I would be confident, though. I would think a midseason tournament would actually work because we've seen two different versions of the play-in tournament, and they were both awesome. And one of the unseen consequences or unforeseen consequences of the play-in tournament, I think, was the race for the sixth seed as well. So
yeah,
if you throw in this midseason tournament and you offer the players, I don't know, $10 million to split between them because I don't really think that players care about winning a draft pick for their franchise, a player that's going to be replacing them, but a little bit of money. Nobody says no to that. You start playing for something that's seriously important in the midseason tournament. Maybe there are different rules as well. You know, like, I don't know, soccer teams have all these different qualifiers where you can only use such and such an age limit of guys or something like that. Maybe you do something that encourages teams to build their bench all the way down to number 15 and you're playing those role players bigger minutes in the midseason tournament. That could be exciting too.
All right, let's end with some Olympics talk here. Kevin Love, he heard the blowback when he scored a spot there on the U.S. national team ahead of the Tokyo Olympics after one of the worst seasons of his career. He had a bad year, didn't play a lot. And Greg Popovich, he heard the blowback too, but he had a message for the haters on Tuesday. Quote, "We're going to work his ass off." He's talking about Kevin Love over the next 4 or 5 weeks here and demand a lot. End quote. That was Pop talking about Kevin Love. Are you up or down though on Love getting one of these Team USA spots, TK?
Oh, I'm majorly up on this. When the rosters were first announced, Kevin Love was the guy that kind of caught my eye instantly. I said it on the first show that we recorded. I love this. He's this edition of Team USA's Carmelo Anthony, back for the first time since 2012. He's the vet who's going to make shots and knows how to play internationally. People have forgotten that Kevin Love is good at this point, I think. He's shot 36.5% from three on this Cavs team for the past three seasons, despite the fact that he clearly doesn't want to be a Cleveland Cavalier anymore. And for me, that's why I really like this, actually, because for Kevin Love, it's an audition. He's going to show the stars. He's going to show the other coaches there, the talent evaluators who are kind of just checking out the game, seeing how people are playing, how they're blending. He's still got the game to help a contender, and I still believe in Kevin Love. He's going to be the next Blake Griffin. Get him in a better situation, and you get a better effort. And that's why this is even good for the Cleveland Cavaliers, because Kevin Love has been banged up since LeBron James left. He only played 25 games last season. And it feels like he only makes news right now for being upset with the Cleveland Cavaliers. If he has a good summer with Team USA, reminds people what he can offer, that makes it a lot easier for the Cavs to trade him. Basically, the only thing that could go wrong here is if Kevin Love somehow picks up an injury during the summer.
Right.
And obviously, that would be a disaster, but I think this is good. You know, I don't know that Kevin Love is going to be getting a ton of minutes for Team USA, but I think he'll have some valuable moments out there. He'll probably hit a big three that swings the momentum at some point.
All right, so TK has it as a win-win-win for the Cavs, for Love, and for Team USA, and Pop trying to get his first gold medal. You agree, Tess?
Yeah, for sure. There's not as much space to cover for Kevin Love on the international floor. That helps. Second, yeah, he wasn't good for the Cleveland Cavaliers because he was done with the Cleveland Cavaliers. He obviously could have acted a little bit differently in his Cleveland Cavs days, for sure. Comported himself a little bit better. I'm sure they would have liked that. But at the same time, it is like Blake Griffin. He's going to go, you know, into this environment and play with great players and show how great he is. He's going to be better. Yeah, as far as his NBA career, he's going to be 33 next year. He does get banged up all the time. Of course, a team could buy in on what he's doing and see what how he's performing there for the U.S. team, but it's three seasons and a monster deal left. You really got to buy in. You really got to buy in to pay him for $30 million for each of these three seasons. I mean, he's talented enough, obviously, to get paid that much. He's earned that money throughout his NBA career, but he does get banged up a lot. It does stink. I remember sitting, you know, with Trey. We were doing our Cleveland Cavs preview as soon as Kevin Love signed that contract, and we both were sort of the opinion, like, he's got the talent to be a number one guy, but at the same time, if you're banged up, if you're old, if you can't move that much, I mean, he can probably showcase himself as a small ball five in this U.S. Tournament, and that's probably a lot of his future in the NBA. But I don't know. It'd be putting a lot of stock into him if you're going to say, like, if you're the Blazers, if you can pull it off and say, yeah, he could be our four and our five, but you're just going to rely on him a ton. So hopefully he stays healthy. I mean, that's the biggest question with Kevin Love at all times. But he's got the talent, obviously. He's a fun dude to watch when he's got it going.
So Pop made the call to offer the spot to Love, Lili. He said his ability to shoot and then be a big guy in the paint there fighting for boards could be valuable, especially when you go up against some of those older, crafty, big European squads. Do you buy that? Does it make sense for Pop to reach out to Love and get that sort of veteranship on this team?
Yeah, one thing I do know about Greg Popovich when it comes to Team USA is don't ever question anybody's credits or ability to perform or the fact that they're even on that team. Because in Australia, when Team USA played Australia, I was at all those scrums there. And a couple of times, some of the local reporters said to Pop, like, you know, is it harder to coach this team knowing this is like a third string USA team? And he did not like that at all. He does not like anyone sort of thinking like, oh, you haven't sent out your best players. So if Greg Popovich believes you are deserving to be on Team USA, then that's it. There's no question you are deserving to be to be on that spot. And Greg Popovich is going to expect you to perform as well. He's not just taking anyone out there to Tokyo for a holiday. He's going out there to win a gold medal. And so if he feels Kevin Love can contribute, whether it's not going to play a ton of minutes, I don't think. But again, a big guy who can spread the floor and grab those rebounds. And he's got those great outlet passes as well. That's a part of the sort of international game. So he's going to be expected to perform. But just don't go to Popovich and say, wasn't there someone better? Are you disappointed? Are you disappointed someone sort of turned down an invitation or something like that? He hates that.
Yeah, he left Bam Adebayo off the 2019 FIBA World Cup team and decided to roll with Miles Turner, Mason Plumlee, and another big guy who I forget, Brooke Lopez. So I don't know if Greg Popovich is 100% right on his calls here, but he's going to be right on Kevin Love.
And now, two pigeons bemoaning the fact you can stream DirecTV satellite-free.
Hey, Frank, a little birdie told me you don't need a satellite dish to get DirecTV.
Which little birdie?
Was it Jimmy the Sparrow?
It's a figure of speech. Point is, you can stream DirecTV over the internet now.
Oh, sure. Next you're going to tell me those big birds are made of metal and filled with people, right?
You mean airplanes?
Stream DirecTV without a satellite dish. Call 1-800-DIRECTV. Terms or restrictions apply. And now, two pigeons bemoaning the fact you can stream DirecTV satellite-free.
You see this? A family watching baseball on DirecTV with no satellite dish in sight.
Let's heckle them.
You call that changing the channel?
Choke up on the remote, buddy.
I hope getting all these games on DirecTV makes up for your mother not pre-chewing your sunflower seeds.
DirecTV has the most MLB games. Call 1-800-DIRECTV. Claim based on total games carried on sports networks. Sports availability varies by zip code and requires choice package. Terms and restrictions apply.
Let's get to Tweet of the Night.
Tweet of the Night. Wow.
Twitter.
What do you got, Lee?
Yeah, well, speaking of Olympics, got some breaking news out of Australia this morning when it was revealed that Paddy Mills, who is making his fourth Olympics, is going to be the flag bearer, the co-flag bearer for Australia, along with female swimmer Kate Campbell. So I'm very, very excited for Paddy Mills. I think he's fully deserving. He becomes the first Indigenous Australian to carry the flag at an Olympics Games opening ceremony. So Paddy Mills has been a fantastic an Olympian for Australia. I would love it. This is likely to be his last Olympics too. I would love it if he could close out with any medal. Any medal will do. Australia's never medaled at the Olympics. We've been very, very close. Australian men have never medaled at the Olympics. Australian women have medaled several times. But I would love it if Paddy could go out there, and finally secure a medal for Australia. It'd be great. And Kate Campbell, two-time Olympian gold medalist as well. Fantastic for her to also be the co-bearer of the Australian flag. So exciting news from Australia.
You said this is Paddy Mills' fourth Olympic Games?
Yes.
Wow.
Yeah.
I don't know. He feels like forever young to me, Paddy Mills. But
definitely.
Yeah.
Right? Like, I just don't think of him as an older guy.
Well, his career started, I think, 2008 with the Blazers. So he's a 13-year NBA veteran there.
Yeah. It's amazing.
Yeah.
All right. Well, congrats to him. Awesome stuff. I saw that going around. I was excited as well for that, Lee. I love a good flag bearer.
I think
Patty Mills finished like third in scoring at the last Olympics, if I remember correctly. He lifts his game for the Olympics. So
FIBA Patty is real.
Yeah.
He loves that molten ball. Who's getting the call? Somebody?
is it me? No, like, I think somebody's calling Laura on her phone, but it's coming through on her iPad, which I'm seeing is across the
weird.
Way.
Over always there. Strange.
Yeah, I'm like, I'm looking at my phone. I know it's in my room, but this thing ain't popping off, so I don't know. Maybe I got to go check in on something. I don't really think so. I'd rather talk about the Olympics with my friends. Is the Australian team looking good for a medal? Come the Olympics. I know there's a lot of new teams making it to the Olympics for their first time. Like, it's Slovenia's first time. Germany hasn't been there in forever. So the Aussies are at least a well-established team in the mix.
Yeah. Well, so in the past, guys like Aaron Baines and Andrew Bogut have played incredibly well. In fact, Andrew Bogut played so well at the last Olympics in Rio. I think that's why he got a contract with the Dallas Mavericks after that, because he was so impressive. So Delhi steps up, you know, we've got those battles out there. I don't believe Josh Giddey, the draft prospect, is going to play. I think he didn't make the final cut, but Josh Green, the Dallas Maverick, he should be playing there. Ben Simmons, of course, he's working on his game there, smooching his girlfriend at Wimbledon, so he can't make the Olympics. So, look, Australia. Brian Goorjian, I believe, is the coach again as well. He's been an Australian basketball coaching legend, second probably only to Lindsay Gaze as far as coaching victories in the Australian game. So I always feel that Australia just steps up at the Olympics and the World Championships. So, man, can we sneak in? We're probably going to finish fourth. We always finish fourth. Like last time, we beat Serbia, I believe, who then went on to finish second to the USA. We beat Serbia in that first game. We beat France in that first round. Then we lost to Spain on free throws. Oh, my God, it was crazy. So,
do you have an Australian jersey?
Not a basketball jersey. I got a soccer jersey that I wear around.
Right.
Yeah.
Why don't you get a basketball jersey?
You know what? I think I will. I think this is the year. This is the year. Yeah.
You should get Patty. Is what you should get.
Yeah, I should. You're right. I should get Patty.
All right. Congrats to Patty Mills. That's pretty awesome news. Let's call it there, boys. Back tomorrow to set up game two of the NBA Finals on Thursday night. So join us here live at 10 a.m. Eastern on YouTube. Shout out to the stream team. Thank you so much for joining us here today. Keep your questions coming for the Beach Steppin' podcast. Email them in, nodunks@theathletic.com. Go get yourself an Athletic subscription, theathletic.com/nodunks. There is a fantastic article up on the king of NBA Twitter, Josiah Johnson, up right now from David Ubin. So go check that out. Get yourself an Athletic subscription so you can read that one. It's fantastic stuff. I was reading it this morning. And that's about it. We will see you guys tomorrow morning at 10 a.m. Eastern live. Clipper Bros.
You heard it here first. Have a great time. Turn up. Love you guys. Awesome.
Thanks for joining us. And remember, I've got a question for you NBA sickos. I don't know what tampering is in the NBA anymore. Like, LeBron posts this yesterday. As soon as Chris Paul wins, one down, three to go, CP3. Is that tampering, or is that just cheering on a fellow NBA player and being a friend?
It's his buddy, man. He's just
potential free agent. Yeah, I know. You're right. You know what? You're right. Family, friends. That's great. That's
family
great.
Family is everything, man. Yeah, family is everything.
Can't wait for the Fast and Friends podcast. Fast Friends?
Oh, yeah. About a month out from the debut of Fast Friends we're going with. That's right. Yeah. We were Fast and Furious and Us. Bit of a mouthful, if we're being honest. I think it looks better than it to say it out loud is. Fast Friends. Keeping it simple.
It's quick off the tongue, for sure.
Yeah, that's right. So anyway, that's coming in a month or so, but we'll talk about Fast and Furious when we get there. We still got basketball to talk about. Embrace the day, people.